we're back.
Whoa. All the way to season two. We
made it.
We have crossed over. Kristen, we have quite the episode here to get into.
Banger of a season opening.
Before that, it's been so long between seasons that I forgot who we are. So
I don't know.
Thank you for listening to Three Truths and a Slide. I'm one of your co-hosts, Aaron Schaefer, and I'm here through the magic of the internet and downloaded audio files, Kristen Froberg. How are you, Kristen?
I'm good. I'm excited. Yeah, a little peek behind the curtain, we took a little bit of a break in recording from season one to season two. I know I'm excited to have some consistency in our audio quality, one hopes, the whole way through. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the experimentations of season one. And so for this, I'm very excited because I know that sometimes with like the first episode of a show, they've got to set up a lot. There are some really, really good like season two, season three, like just some season premieres out there. And so I'm excited to see where Sliders fits in the pantheon of like absolutely raging like subsequent season openers.
I would say over the arc of the whole show, there are parts of all of that are inside this episode. So this episode is like a great, like even into the season five, there's just like a little bit of everything in this episode. This episode is quite prescient. Prescient? Is that the right word?
I think so. Well, and then, you know, once we watch it, I'll be able to weigh in a little bit more accurately, but I'm excited. Yeah.
But so our show, Three Truths and a Slide, we talk about the TV show Sliders, which premiered in the mid-90s on Fox and ran for 5 seasons. Each episode, I tell Kristen three truths and a lie of what she's about to watch, and she tries to figure out how bad of a liar I am. So we are... Kristen, are... Oh, so this next episode is... Season 2, Episode 1, titled Into the Mystic.
Into the Mystic.
Yeah. It was released March 1st, 1996, which is basically an entire year between the ending of Season 1. So a full year of a world without Sliders. Just a truly tragic time in our history.
I mean, there was a lot of parallels and or me mentioning Succession in season one. And I'm going to let y'all know it won't be stopping in season two. I know that I feel like I have low blood sugar just whenever Succession's not on the air. There's nothing I can only take multivitamins and do my best. So, I mean, I would assume that that's how the Slide Nation of the mid to late 90s felt at that time. Still really working on getting Slide Nation and Slide Hive to take off. I think it'll happen. I think it will not happen, but that's okay. This is for the real ones.
It always starts. We're on the ground floor of it.
Yeah,
the ground floor of the hive.
Yeah.
All right. So, Kristen, are you ready for the next batch of three truths and a slide?
Oh, extremely ready. Yes.
All right. Jerry leads a seance.
Yes.
Second, which doctors are in the yellow pages? Third,
I think so.
A lawyer in a rickshaw gives our heroes advice.
Got to think about it.
Fourth, a fortune teller tells our heroes the very important advice of, quote unquote, stay together. I'll go through that list again.
Okay.
Jerry leads a seance. There are witch doctors in the yellow pages. Third, a lawyer in a rickshaw gives our heroes legal advice. And fourth, a fortune teller tells our heroes that they need to stay together.
Okay. Whew. Okay. I'm going to let the people the Slide Nation, the Slide Hive, yes, into my process.
We appreciate you walking us through the process, like on what was that one show with 100 briefcases where people talked through like narrowing items down? What was that called?
What?
Like the Howie Mandel like money briefcase show. What was the name of that?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but...
Hold on, I'm looking it up right now.
I have to let you know that the sound of your typing coming through my earbuds is amazing. It's like stock, like whatever the sound equivalent of like a stock photo is, like it sounds like that, and it's just, it makes me very happy.
No, it's Deal or No Deal. That's what it was.
Oh, okay. So, oh, yeah.
So, like, it's like Slide or No Slide. Like, you always narrow down the options for us. It's something that I've grown to really... I enjoy that more than I enjoy coming up with the list itself.
Oh, well, I'm glad you enjoy it. Well, and for me, it's that I think I'm probably going to be wrong. So I'm kind of, like, trying to get partial credit from our vast array of listeners, which what I think... Where were we last time, Aaron? Like somewhere between 4 and 4 million. Like it's hard to narrow it down further from there. But doing numbers. And yes, I'm really excited to bring Sliding Made a Difference back in just full force this season. Because, you know, sometimes it takes a while for sliding to make a difference and to get into your groove. And so, we kind of looked at some numbers analytics and Sliding Made a Difference seemed to be a fan favorite. I don't know what I'm talking about, but okay. So did you notice that this first time you said it and I was like, yes, absolutely. And then when you got to the third one, I was like, I don't know. Normally I wait until the end, I think. But so my first instinct was 1, 2, and 4 are the things that happen in the episode. But then I thought, it might be 2, 3, and 4. But I think that I will keep it with 1, 2, and 4 are the things that happen in the episode, and maybe the third doesn't quite happen. I'm excited regardless, though.
Okay, so a lawyer. So your guess is the lie is a lawyer in a rickshaw gives our heroes legal advice.
Yeah, I'm very confident that witch doctors are in the yellow pages. You know, Aaron, thank you again for listening to our first season, if that is a thing you did. I was talking to you off mic about how, like, some of the stuff that hasn't aged the best, like, it's good to have some distance from it, because in hindsight, listening back to the other episodes, some of the things I'm like, I don't know if I'm that upset about it. And then other things are like, yeah, you'd probably do it differently now. I think that however they portray witch doctors will be so deeply offensive to people who take goop Gwyneth Paltrow stuff seriously, and that's fine because they're fine and none of them are listening to this podcast. Much love. But just an absolutely wild turn too. She's a really good actress, you know, and sometimes I just think about if someone had tried to tell me, hey, this woman who's, you know, really quite good in things like The Talented Mr. Ripley, etc., she's going to stop acting and become one of the most bizarre rich people home shopping personalities and be selling all manner of like woo-woo type stuff. Anyway, love your work in the MCU that you forgot you were in, Gwyneth. Iconic. I was going to say that I'm sorry if this episode offends you, but I think you'll be fine. I think that this, I guess what I'm saying is I think that people who like, I really want to see if this has aged poorly in a way that is hilarious is what I'm saying.
There are layers to this episode. That is all I can say.
Can't wait.
There are layers to the rich text that is Into the Mystic.
Into the Mystic.
All right, so should we go into the void and come out the other slide and see what happens?
Yes. Let's dive in with the energy of the stunt doubles each and every week. I'm ready.
All right, we'll see you there.
Bye. We're back, folks. Oh.
Mystically, we have returned.
Can't wait to talk about this episode. It was so much fun.
There is so much, so much. We are so not. Much.
We're not going to run out of material this time, I don't think.
Okay, so
nor any time, but
let's shotgun through the list real quick, and let's get into the world and get to how this episode starts. So, yep. Kristen, does Jerry lead a séance?
How am I drawing a blank? He didn't really, but
no, he didn't. That was the lie. No séance. Sans séance.
I honestly, even though I finished watching the episode for a second time this very morning, and I only pausing to navigate over to Google Notes, Google Docs, and take notes, I was like, okay, did you blink it? Did you miss it? No, he didn't do that. He did not do that.
Are witch doctors in the yellow pages?
Sure are, yeah.
Did a lawyer in a rickshaw give our heroes advice?
He really did.
And does a fortune teller give our heroes the advice of stay together?
Yeah.
Like, I'm so glad a fortune teller told them, because I don't think they would have heeded that advice otherwise.
From not there was not another soul who could tell them that information. No.
All right. So this world is a world that is run on magic. But it's a lot like this podcast, because some of the magic are lies and others are a mysterious truth. But the truth can be stranger than the lies. That
is
this episode.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of powerful, this season two starts off with a bang in a graveyard scene, which it turns out is extremely fitting, because starting in season two, we need to eulogize some things, Kristen.
Yeah.
First and foremost, no more Mark Mothersbaugh. Kristen, would you like to say a few words?
Gonna miss him a lot. He did go on certainly to, I don't want to say bigger and better things because we don't want to diminish Sliders, but certainly went on to have a wonderful career of scoring, composing and scoring all kinds of things. So we'll miss him, but, you know, one can just get on the IMDb and look at his journey. We love to see it. We love to see all things prosperous for Mark Mothersbaugh.
Mm. And then second thing to eulogize is no more Sliders in the bumpers between commercials.
No, and that's it's a thing that is to be missed, I think.
I do.
It really set a tone.
I feel like they bring it back briefly later. Like, it's like it happens inconsistently, but it's not a consistent thing anymore, and that's what we're eulogizing.
Mm.
And perhaps worst of all, Jerry got a haircut. Like, eulogizing those long follicles. Kristen, how did this impact you?
The feelings that I experienced, it's like, you know, when a lot of people watch the little known independent film Avengers Infinity War, they like to talk about, spoilers for Avengers Infinity War, who that was taken in the snap made them the saddest. Like, was it Bucky? Was it Baby Spider-Man? It's Baby Spider-Man. Everyone's the saddest about that. But like, for me, that was actually not true, because the saddest thing for me was when Captain America's beard was taken from us. And actually, that didn't happen until Endgame, I suppose. But in the way that I was impacted and emotionally destroyed by that, so was I when I saw that Jerry had less hair. And then there's in-universe questions, like, did they give him a haircut while he was in the tent with the IV? Which, I had questions about that. I was like, how did they get an IV? And I remember, Ryan's a doctor. And we say goodbye to Ryan, too, I believe. No more Agent Krychek.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. Happy trails to a lot of things and people.
I mean, the only way they could have given the haircut is when he was unconscious. So it was not
He would have fought them if he had been with us. So there's issues there. He's still crushing it, still looking great. What he does have, incredible volume and shine as always, but you know. But maybe it just, they were having trouble fitting it under the wig, which we'll get to. Cannot wait to discuss the wig work in this episode. But
the wig game is very strong in this episode, definitely.
Oh, yeah. But an impactful opening sequence, I would say.
So the episode, the tombstone scene, is really us in Jerry's mind and his dreams. And the professor is leaning on a tombstone. Kristen, did you notice that this tombstone was unintentionally rickety?
I didn't. Well, I assumed it was intentionally rickety because it's in his imagination or whatever.
No, I think that they intended for it to look like solid granite, but it was rocking underneath his arm. The only other time I'd seen that, a friend pointed out to me, was in the TV show Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, where they showed a graveyard scene and the tombstones that were up were like just slightly waving in the wind. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, even Garth Marenghi is on the shoulder of sliders.
Ooh.
The
professor was having a great time with his lines, though. Like, Jonathan Rhys Davies looked like he seemed to be having so much fun with the dialogue. Like, he got burned. It's all we can do here. I wrote, LOL, he's having fun. He loved it.
And Krycek leaves the show with a big bang with Wade kisses. And the whole scene, like, everything is like a grayscale until the very end, with a burst of technicolor brown, Jerry's hands shoot up from the earth.
Terrifying, impactful.
I was like, technicolor brown? Like, why is this happening?
Yeah, no, just classic, like, mid-90s special effects, 10 out of 10, no notes.
And then the way he opens is the lone eye opens. So who knew that Lost was also on the shoulders of sliders?
Sliders has given us so much.
And when that happens, we know that this episode is about Jerry, just like the way Lost establishes. So Wade apparently told no to Krycek, and he couldn't face Jerry after the haircut, so he left. Jerry's still ailing from his gunshot, and then they slide away. But right before they slide away, there's a dude raking leaves who laughs at them. And he's the same pallbearer from Jerry's dream. And remember that face. It will be seen over this episode. And this episode only. This guy doesn't come back for anything else.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's a huge
Aaron. No. Okay. For some reason, I thought we were laying groundwork in this episode for things that are going to be present in the series. And I was like, all right, okay, who's this guy? I'm not going to Google him, but I can tell that he's about to be a major player in the series.
No.
Even, especially considering the way they end. I can't.
No.
Wow.
I know. It's like the DMV investigation, or the FBI DMV in Earth Prime all over again.
It's like Benish.
Yes.
Benish. These are MVPs. Why aren't they here? I mean, we still got a lot of good stuff. I mean, but no, I'm not kidding. I was confident that, ooh, this guy's at least about to be in, you know, most of the season. But apparently, no.
So then we're swept away to Magic Land, and they look in the yellow pages for Jerry's hurt shoulder. And it's all a bunch of sorcerers and witch doctors.
Yes.
And at the doctor's office, the nurse is like, oh, what's wrong with him? Jealous fight with a lover? It's like... Is this is this like a HIPAA approved comment from a nurse?
I mean, her delivery of it. Well, I'm going to say that first we're going to get to the MVP of the episode, but the second MVP of the episode for me was the people who had no lines and yet were just absolutely going for it and everything they did. I felt that some of the people who had lines, I was like, I don't know, you're going for it, but you're not going for it quite as much as the silent people. So I was honestly, I was just kind of taken by her line delivery. But yeah, what a thing to say. It's the kind of thing that you would be like, well, nurse said some weird stuff, probably not going to go back there. And of course, that's like the only reason that they would not go back to this establishment, because they have a very good experience there, clearly.
And was that like a leftover line from the land where women ruled the world?
Yeah, it would just, it had an odd vibe. But then somewhere in here, I liked Rembrandt's line about how something about the consistency in every America they go to, like the healthcare is always bad. And I was like, ooh, it aged well. It aged incredibly well. And it hurts. It hurts, but
I know that it's still a hot take. So then there's a thunderclap and a face emerges, and it is the Doctor slash Warlock slash Sorcerer. And his face looks like a bunch of like leftover scraps from The Exorcist, like prop department.
Yeah, I wasn't clear what effects had been used to create it, but I mean, I flinched when I saw it. So I was, you know, and then he's got kind of a messy bob, I would say, for his hairstyle.
Oh, but by the way,
messy chin length bob.
Huge miss with the Sorcerer. The Sorcerer should have been Benish.
Mm.
Oh, not feeling the Benish vibe. All right.
Of course, I want more Benish. I always want more Benish. But in the right, I'm thinking about it.
And so the Sorcerer's opening line, he looks at Rembrandt and is like, "Why did you wait so long to bring him to me?" And that line has no payoff. It's like implied.
No.
I'm like, wait, where is this thread going?
There's a lot of lines that don't have a payoff, but still we have fun. We persist.
So then the Sorcerer starts massaging Jerry's head like he thinks he's Slade or something.
Which he's not. Well, and speaking of her, like he tries to have a moment with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, resulting in a great moment between her and Jonathan Rhys Davies. He says something to her and she's like, "What?" And the professor just goes, "He's hitting on you." And he sounds so tired. Like, I love a good throwaway line delivery. So it was at this point, like right away, I was like, okay, well, I know I'm really enjoying everyone's energy as a cast, as a cohesive unit.
We might cut this part out, but I wrote down too many notes about when they were looking on the wall and Slade noticed that it was the witch's alphabet was like the eye chart. And she said that she knew about the witch's alphabet because her friend Sabrina is into it. And I'm like, is this teasing like a Melissa Joan Hart crossover, Sabrina the Teenage Witch episode? Is Sabrina Lloyd, the actress who plays Wade, into the Mystic? Like, how deep is this fractal conspiracy going?
Because when she said her friend Sabrina, I was like, oh, that's the actress's name. But I didn't think of the Sabrina the Teenage Witch thing until just now.
And so then for services rendered of headache, not shoulder repair, the Sorcerer charges them $243 or whatever. And our heroes decide.
Right.
Oh, sorry, what?
Oh, I just said sounds about right. Yeah.
Our heroes decide to dine and dash on the bill. And a curse is brought down on them as they run away.
Oh, indeed.
So then they go to stay in a hotel in room number 13. And Wade brings the real healing with a deep tissue shoulder massage.
She's, again, I'm using the phrase again, but differently. She's really going for it. He's like, whoa, ease up.
And, ooh, there's a skeleton in the closet.
A delightful Home Depot. Like, I would say it's Home Depot level and not Spirit Halloween level. And that's why this is a good show. But Rembrandt finds it and screams. And then he shows the cut to it is the pan to it is really funny. It's just kind of like gently hanging there. But they're like, oh, we'll use the other closet.
And so then there's a knock in the middle of the night and our heroes coalesce around the doorway. And Wade, by the way, what's up with the onesie that Wade is rocking? Did you notice this also?
I noticed it the second time and didn't know if I should speak on it because I don't know what there is to truly say about it.
Yeah, I only wrote questions. I didn't have any answers for the onesie. I just have questions.
Exactly. It's just, but I like that they just present it and then like there's just no commentary. Jerry doesn't have a snide comment on it, but indeed, adult onesie.
And then there's ominous knocking on the door. And then somehow the door opens. I forget who opens the door.
And on the other side of it is Leonardo DiCaprio doing the pointing meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. No.
Kristen,
it's someone dressed like a Grim Reaper, but it made me think of that meme.
Kristen, I know that you love a spicy processor server scene.
I was excited.
How does this rank with your process server scenes you've seen?
It was even better than the last one. Again, Alexa, play just in case one of our between 2 and 2 million listeners does have their Alexa on in the house. But just once again, crank up the volume on how far I'll go. I want to see how far they can go with process server small storylines. No, delighted. Delighted. It was at this point on my first viewing, I was like, this person is the MVP of the episode, and we didn't even see their face or hear their voice. So, but there was much more in store.
So the Home Depot Grim Reaper gives Jerry papers that says, like, it looked like just like a bunch of like ink stains on the paper. Like it looked like, well, like the makeup slowly from his hands was like bleeding onto the paper.
He has to slowly point at him with his long, unhygienic nail for a while. And why am I assuming it's a man? Why am I assuming gender? Like, we don't know.
All we know is the bony finger of judgment.
Yeah, got to put a pin in that and come back to it because there's much to discuss. But yeah, it's this scene where this person has no lines is just a rich text. But he does he does a very intentional point at Jerry to let Jerry know that, I mean, because it takes a really long time to give Jerry the what ends up being a bill. No, it's being sued. He's being sued. But we take a long time to get there. So it was very important to point at Jerry to let us as the audience know where this was going.
So then they need to go consult legal advice. And so they talk to the rickshaw lawyer. And that scene, like, I think that they filmed it on a windy day, so they couldn't use any of the audio. And it's the weirdest ADR because it first, like, shows, like, a shot of the city somehow, and someone's talking, and it sounds like someone's, like, on the radio, and you're, like, in a car listening. But that's the guy talking. Like, everyone sounds like they're on the radio in this episode, in this scene.
And it did make me think of The Godfather because... No, jokes in there, but I had the delightful experience of watching The Godfather in a theater recently. I love the opening of that film. It's very blatantly dubbed, I Believe in America. Like, it's iconic, but there's some serious dubbing in the film The Godfather but I mean, there, as with here, you just notice it and you keep rocking. Like, you're still having a good time. But no, Bizarro ADR is just one of my absolute favorite things in any filmed entertainment, I would say.
And what goes hand in hand with Bizarro ADR is exposition dump. So they're being please.
Shout out to the guy pushing him, though, because that's when I began to say these are the silent heroes of the episode. This guy is like shifting. He's looking around. He has no lines, and yet he made an impact on me.
Yeah, so it could have been the same Grim Reaper guy. It very could have been the same actor.
Oh, I hope it was.
And did you notice how he knew when to bike and pedal and when to stop?
I didn't pay attention to that because there was so much else going on.
It was a clap on, clap off situation. So rickshaw lawyer did these like the two claps of the clap on, which came around, you know, the commercials were on around that time. Then the guy would go and then but it's like at like not even a leisurely stroll. It's the slowest rickshaw I've ever seen. And then he claps to get the guy to stop. I'm like, you went like four squares on the ground. Like, why are you having him stop?
Just creating business for himself, I think. I think that they gave him a lot of freedom, and that's what he felt.
So in the exposition dump, we find out that Jerry's being sued by an accredited shaman, and he gets Jerry's brain if they default on the $266 bill. And
yeah, it doesn't really seem proportionate, but I don't know. In this world, maybe it is. Makes for good tension, I would say.
And turns out there's this guy known as the sorcerer, or person known as the sorcerer, who sponsors everything, and their only hope is to get his help.
Their only hope.
So now our heroes are on the streets, walking around, trying to figure out what to do. And DMV bounty hunters enter stage left.
Powerful.
And our heroes walk by a tent with a woman who immediately opens the tent and says, "In here." And all of our heroes just go in.
Yeah.
And as they're sitting...
She's ready, they're ready, we're all ready.
As they're sitting down, she says, "I've been expecting you." I love that. I love "I've been expecting you" from a medium. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So she starts using...
It would be irresponsible of her to say anything else.
She starts using generic phrases, and the professor is a skeptic. But then she has a great line that cuts him straight to his marrow, which is saying that he is, like with Jerry, the Salieri to his Mozart. And I was like,
oh, I clocked that. Ooh. I was like, for fans of the, I believe it's 1984, hit award-winning Milos Forman film Amadeus, or I guess people who like are fans of Mozart, or for a deep cut, Salieri, you all know that. But you don't often see a Salieri Amadeus joke in the wild. So I feel like I get excited when I do.
That might be the name of the episode.
Well, we love to, I have more potential episode titles coming later, so we love to have more than one option.
So then she also drops a line about the professor neglecting his son. And honestly, that's a hot take for me. I've seen this show several times that I did not know about that. So there might be an episode I'm completely forgetting about. But don't.
Well, and it didn't jump out to me the first time, but it sure did the second time. And I was like, well, are we going to keep it moving? We are going to keep it moving. Are we coming back to this? I would like us to come back to this.
Yeah. So, and we find out. So the professor goads the medium, tell us something we don't know. And she goes, the sorcerer is a slider. And our collective minds melted.
Oh, yeah.
So our heroes go into a cab. And the cab driver has a great line about Ouija boards in the classroom. How it's a violation between coven and state. Like such, I love like that. That's so nice. It's so 90s. It's so sliders. Like I was loving every second of that almost as much as I loved the renaming of the Golden Gate Bridge.
I laughed really hard at that one.
It's like the Golden Gargoyle Gate Bridge. It's the clunkiest rename. It's like, oh, come on.
But it's delightful. It's everything I want from the show.
That's fair, yes. And then, so they go into the woods and there's spooky vibes. There's flash, what do you call those? Strobe lights that go randomly are in the woods. And then they make it to the Golden Gargoyle Gate Bridge, which I need to call this out ahead of time. The very first shot shows it as a normal like bridge that you would walk over where all of the wooden planks are horizontal. But as our heroes are walking on it, it looks like a skinny basketball court. Did you pick up on any lifted storylines from any movies?
Oh, you mean like The Wizard of Oz?
Oh, no, we'll get to that. No, I mean Indiana Jones.
Oh, I should, because I watched, well, so the first one, my favorite. I watched that fairly recently. Yeah, the sliders sliders do be lifting and borrowing from so many properties. Yeah. Well, because the Wizard of Oz kind of foreshadowing and vibes start jumping out like pretty quickly. But yeah, I mean, would it be sliders if they didn't? We got to have a fair amount of Indiana Jones in any given season. I hope we get some Jurassic Park at some point.
They got Jonathan Rhys-Davies, so they gotta bring the Indiana Jones when they can. And I didn't look up any of the dates, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was on his demo reel to get him the job for Indiana Jones.
Hmm.
So they make it to the end of the bridge, and just like Indiana Jones, they just need to walk across the plexiglass to make it to the other side. And so then they make it to the castle with two eternal flames, and they have an ominous knock, and they enter into the lobby that, again, I think Twin Peaks was on around the same time, and they totally lifted that vibe. They had the red carpets, ornate walls, like a single button was pressed by a creepy guy behind a desk. It was very Lynchian. What were your thoughts there, Kristen?
So I haven't watched Twin Peaks because I'm afraid to watch Twin Peaks because I'm specifically afraid of that man that like is behind the bed or whatever, Bob or something. I have seen Mulholland Drive, and I will watch The Straight Story because that looks like a charming film where Matthew from Man of Green Gables like rides a lawnmower across the country or something like that. I'm afraid of Twin Peaks, but I mean, we've had discussions about the shows and things that borrow from Twin Peaks. You told me about how Darkwing Duck borrows from Twin Peaks. I mean,
yeah, Twin Peaks. It's a great episode.
The hold that Twin Peaks had at this time on the culture, like pretty remarkable, I would say. Because I don't, I know it was like a hit show, but was it a mainstream show?
Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen the show.
That would not surprise me. I should watch it at some point. That wouldn't surprise me though if a lot of, I mean, don't people borrow from David Lynch a lot and stuff? And that was one of the more accessible things that he's done. Well, I mean, even just in terms of like plot, but in terms of it was on network television. But just a fun Lynchian tangent from someone who's barely seen any David Lynch. So.
And then our heroes are waiting in the lobby, and so the professor and Jerry start comparing brain sizes, and then the butler comes out, who is the pallbearer, the gardener. It is everybody
him.
In every scene, only in this episode.
It's like that song, "I'm Every Woman, It's All in Me." Anything you want done, baby. You know, I don't want to sing too much because copyright, and my voice is really good and people can't handle that, but no. He's every man. It's all in him. He's just all over the place. Okay, just because I love to draw a goofy parallel, I was listening to just a great German recording of the musical Evita this week. Fictional, weird version of Che Guevara. Absolutely everywhere in that thing. He's popping up as waiters. He's popping up as like old-timey paparazzi. And that's this guy. He's just all over the place. And I am still truly shaken by your revelation that we do not see this man again. That's a wasted opportunity.
That dude is then flanked by two DMV unibrow guards. So it's two guards, one brow between them.
Don't tell me they're afraid that they're going to get like yeeted out of the building by these. And I want to qualify this. I'm not saying IT guy like in a derogatory manner. I'm saying the kind that like sullenly comes into your office and not even like, did you try plugging it and unplugging it? We had one actually. I mean, he was fun, but he would call me on the, like, my computer would suddenly stop working. And before I could even do anything, he'd be like, "Stop trying to be on your computer." Like, my phone would ring and I'd answer it. And it would be him on the other end of the line, like, "Stop, I'm in your computer." And I'm like, "Well, I can clearly see that. Can you please give me some warning of when you're going to be not hacking?" Because it was like legal. But he would just like suddenly take over my computer remotely to fix something with absolutely no warning. And he was just cranky all the time. I wish him well, though. Anyway, that's the energy that these guys were giving me for some reason.
A mysterious voice overhears them and summons them to the upper chamber where they walk in and they, do you want to describe what they see?
I don't know if I know how to describe what they see.
So I wrote down a floating Dracula with a goatee who asked them if they're friend or foe.
Well, I wrote down it's the MVP of the episode. There he is. It's him. I wrote down the best special effect I've ever seen in my life. No, I love it. It looks like William Shakespeare vampire, What We Do in the Shadow. Like, it's giving everything.
What We Do in the Shadows. What We Do in the Sliders.
Yes, yes. It's episode title. Who can say, Aaron? We don't know. But no, it's truly everything I want out of a 90s special effect. Not a thing wrong with it.
And
and he's kind of a smoke monster too, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, Lost. on the show.
I haven't even seen Lost, and I know about the
And then, so we should be able to tell that it's really Jerry behind the scenes of Dracula's Smoke Monster, because he plagiarizes JFK, which is a callback to back when Jerry was Che O'Connell in the episode where he started lifting like a bunch of like famous speeches to incite the Oakland Raider vigilante group.
Yeah.
And then, so the plagiarism is, ask not what you can do for yourselves, ask what you can do for me. And then the vampire sends them out to get blueprints from the witch doctor. Which is very convenient because the bounty hunter captures them and takes them to that witch doctor.
Sorry, breaking. As I work with technology, I moved my little window that shows that we're recording over, and it was hiding part of my notes, Aaron, because there was a really good joke in here. Oh. So we had the Salieri to his Mozart. Just as they hop around, I too am hopping around.
Oh, please.
I just wrote, for he is about to go sliding, in really big letters.
That's right.
Because that line delivery was really good. And then someone asked a question, and the answer was, is Helen ready? And it's such a... Do you know who Helen Reddy is?
No, so she's a singer. I didn't get the joke, though.
She's saying, well, I only know... For some reason, I grew up in a very anti-Helen Reddy household. My parents always cracking jokes about Helen Reddy. Maybe when I see them this weekend, I'll be like, so what? Like, what was your vendetta against her? But I think she's saying, I am woman, hear me roar. And I think it was kind of a one-hit wonder situation. But I didn't know that she was still so present in the pop culture in 1995 or 96 to be deserving of a, like, it was the corniest joke, but it was delivered with, like, full force. And I loved it. It was...
Yeah, so when I heard the joke, I looked it up on the internet, or my computer was connected to the internet, so I could do 5 seconds of research. Yeah,
your computer's on the internet.
And then I was like, oh, she's a singer. Oh, she did that song. Like, I was like, I don't understand the cultural significance of bringing her up. Was she a thing in the mid-90s? I have no idea.
It was like a joke that would be in a Christopher Guest movie, and I loved it. And then also the delivery of bats, vicious, blood-sucking bats. Like, see, and then this guy was the MVP of the episode. And then only two lines later, I had to dethrone him, and I wrote, the vampire hologram is the MVP of the episode. And then LOL Rembrandt, made a new friend. Made a new friend could be the title of the episode, because his delivery, like his response to the giant floating vampire was, yeah, we made a new friend. I love Clevent Derricks. He's so good. So then I've caught up now, and I'm at Ask Not What I Can Do For You, Ask What You Can Do For Me.
And then, so they're captured by the bounty hunter, who takes them to the witch doctor. Someone makes a comment that the last president was Edward Jr.
Edward Jr., which... I want to give it some space. We can cut the... Well, no, I've started it, so I have to. We can cut this out or not cut it out. Ugh, obviously a very complicated time... I can't necessarily recommend a Johnny Depp movie. I will say Ed Wood is a great movie. I will say Plan 9 from Outer Space is an iconic movie. How about that? Everybody go watch Plan 9 from Outer Space. But Ed Wood Jr. there was a lot happening in this scene. All of it very, very good.
And in a room where a lot happens, Wade kicks it up a notch by starting to use her charm to distract the sorcerer, and then they grab the gun, and Jerry demands to see the files, and in 5 seconds he finds a room that is locked behind a draped curtain and enters it to get the blueprints.
I just like the Benny Hill theme for me was playing like in my mind as all this happened, and it was perfect. Again, no notes.
And then Rembrandt shoots a rubber snake,
Yeah, quite probably someone's pet, Aaron.
And whose pet? Is it the witch doctor with a knife who gets single punch knockout by Rembrandt? I think so.
Well, Jonathan Rhys Davies got to have a shot chaser moment. Did he get both of those lines? It was like, quite probably someone's pet that you just shot. And that was the someone.
Sorry to cut you off.
Well, sometimes in my notes, Aaron, I look at what I wrote and I'm like, I don't got to read. I forget what I meant here. The next words I wrote were the hair. So we're getting to the crown jewel of the episode, I would say.
So they run back across the plexiglass and they're in the castle and the butler is trying to keep them from delivering the plans. But Jerry runs up the stairs and runs through the hologram because the unibrow is closing in on him.
And it's just more. I loved it last season when he yelled until he got out of an execution chamber. And in this instance, he just ran. Like, you can't contain Jerry. And he doesn't even have to try that hard. I'm going to say that he probably does have the same like power level as Thanos. And spoilers for, I forget which one of them, but there was a Marvel movie recently that had a reveal that Harry Styles was Thanos's brother. And that's a missed opportunity. You know who Thanos's brother should be. I don't even have to say it, but I will say it. Jerry O'Connell.
So Jerry then goes through a door. And we start to see electronics and we hear beeping and it feels completely antithetical to a mystical land that we've been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Kristen, yet again, we get a Jerry watching Jerry moment.
When the first time you watched it, when did you know that it was going to be him? Was it when you saw the waterfall of smooth, silky hair or...
Well, I know I wasn't expecting a Coachella Jerry. I know that.
It's so timely because as we record this, it is Coachella weekend. We're not at that, but we feel it, you know.
One thing they do well is that Coachella Jerry needs his glasses to see Jerry. And by the way, so when everyone slides away, he takes the glasses off after they all slide away.
There was three moments. I've been letting my we should gif this game slide. I didn't even mean to say that. It just happened. It just happened. And that's the power of sliders. Spoiler, folks, this week I didn't do a sliding made a difference because the sliding made a difference is these moments that are happening along the way. I just accidentally said slide in my speech and that's how sliding made a difference. Risk.
Coachella Jerry has set up an import-export business between other sliding worlds, and the butler betrayed him, and he kicks him out.
But when he takes off his glasses, when he puts on the glasses, when he takes off, these are gif-worthy moments, in addition to at the beginning of the episode when he got, like, barfed out of the portal, but... a lot that Double Jerry, Coachella Jerry is giving us here is just, it's all good. It's all good. Jerry is never going for it as much as when he is either being one of his doubles or interacting with one of his doubles. It's his best work. It's his finest work.
Did you write down any, so how would you describe Coachella Jerry's outfit, by the way?
The tailoring of
tailoring
pant. It's a leather pant or a pleather pant.
I was like, is it a vinyl pant? Like, I couldn't figure out the texture.
It's in the synthetic plastic-ish plant pant family. I don't see it. It broke my brain. It's just, I don't know how those pants are supposed to fit. But there's whatever that is, and then there's whatever was happening here, and then he's wearing kind of a a regular kind of black button down with it, I would say, because when you're wearing a statement piece, like a leather pant.
Statement piece.
But it had the fit of like pants that are, it was an ill-fitting leather pant. I'm just going to say it. Like, no disrespect, Jerry.
I've never seen pleats on a pleather pant before.
Maybe it was a choice, though, because so this is someone who has a lot of money, clearly, and can have whatever they want, but is not in touch with seemingly any aspect of the world. So maybe they were like, what's cool? Leather pants, those are cool, but didn't understand that like leather pants is like a choice and a commitment, and you've just got to, there's other things to be taken into consideration if you're going to wear the leather pant. But he's just wearing them, you know. So and
the reason the pants are a statement piece is because the shirt is tucked into the pants with a prominent belt buckle. And the
it's
and
a good outfit,
fully
guys,
buttoned to the
it.
Top to make your eyes like go all the way to the top, only to see the cascading hair which draws your eyes back down. It's very it's like one of those like illusion things where you look at it and like the picture looks like it's moving. It's like that.
I didn't think that blue shirt Jerry could be dethroned this early in the series is my favorite doppelganger Jerry, but leather pant Jerry, Coachella Jerry, I think he may have done it. Like, I have to sit with this, but wow, it's a look, folks. Please watch this episode. It's a delight.
And did you write down any one-liners that Coachella Jerry says?
Well, like, he has a very impactful discussion with Wade. He's a prisoner of his own, a prisoner of your own success. His delivery of, in some ways, aren't we all? And then my other favorite was, my other self is so vital. He's living his life.
I had that in my notes also. Yes.
Yes. And I felt seen by that, because every time that I'm like laying on my bed playing on my phone when I could be doing some other stuff, I'm like, well, you know what? In a parallel universe, some other version of me is crushing it. And now I get to say, my other self is so vital. She's living her life. But it's the adoration with which he says it, because he's talking about Jerry Prime, that just makes it chef's kiss. What an episode.
And so when our heroes leave the Coachella Festival,
sadly,
it is the worst French that's ever spoken between the professor and Coachella Jerry. I rewound it. I was like, wait, I was like, oh, yeah. They're like, you know, goodbye, my brother or whatever. But I was like, oh, that is just the worst. There was just no act. There was no attempt at either of them giving an accent. And to be fair, Coachella people, they're all like inventing their own accents. So to be Coachella and not have an accent, amateur move.
Yeah. But at the same time, also kind of perfect, because of course.
And so, oh, all the sliding this episode, it happens off camera because Goatee Dracula took all of the budget.
Yeah. Well, rightly so, as he should, I would say. Goatee like, Dracula,
The
excellence of Goatee Dracula can't be understated.
The next episode also has a lot of sliding off camera, and the next episode has very little special effects, unlike this one. Like,
I guess it went into the wardrobe or something then.
Yeah, floating Dracula really torpedoed the budget for the next couple of episodes, and we couldn't be happier for it.
Well, it's a lot like, do you remember the time that like Matt Weiner apparently spent like so much money to play that kind of, as far as Beatles songs go, kind of random Beatles song at the end of like a Mad Men episode, like at the end? And that's actually the same energy as CGI floating Dracula.
And then
he is the Beatles song of this show.
One last thing about Coachella Jerry. He's a master slider. So he's like, oh, I'll send you back to your home. So they go into the portal and they have 53 seconds to determine if this is their home. So obviously there's a current day newspaper just laying on the road.
Just right formed. There. This season's almanac.
And they pick it up and they learn that the Raiders are playing in Oakland now. OJ is tried for a double murder and that the Cleveland Indians made it to the World Series. And they're like, not that much could have happened here. And then,
I love that those are the events they pick.
I know. Like, and then so they try, Jerry tries the gate and it doesn't squeak. And again,
well, after his little speech about the importance, like he knows this gate like the back of his hand. So a lot is riding on this squeak.
And again, this is a callback to the first time they did it. They should have said the line, a lot is hinging on this. No one
but
says that.
They didn't.
No.
Someday maybe we can ask them why.
But why didn't the gate squeak, Kristen? Did anything happen to the gate?
Because that man, I'm every woman, I'm every man, Che Guevara. That dude that's been all over the episode that I, until an hour ago, thought was going to be all up in the rest of the season, he fixed it. He comes out of the, they slide, and then he comes out of the house with Jerry's mom. And it's weird. It's a real weird conversation. It's like, yeah, he'll come back someday. Anyway, I fixed the gate. Like, it's just very totally interesting. But he fixed it. And I was like, it's so interesting that this show didn't, like, have him say, I fixed it, and then, like, smile ominously at the camera to indicate that he had done it intentionally to keep Jerry sliding. But since he's not going to be an ongoing character, I guess that makes sense for him. He's just a regular dude in this world, right?
Yeah, yeah. They had, like, vibes of, like, the Q guy from Star Trek Next Generation. Mm. Or, like, some sort of, like, henchman of someone else who's, like, in on a thing and is, like, mysterious himself. That was the vibe of this guy the whole episode. And I can tell you this. He's not in the next episode for a fact. And he's not prominent in the show by any stretch. So...
Oh. But we do see him. Well, because in the one, when Jerry was doing classism, he didn't want his mother to be with that man because that man, like, is gainfully employed, just a hardworking guy on his profession. Jerry didn't like that.
Yeah, but that was a different guy. That was a different actor.
Oh, see, I'm remembering people who, like, were in the yard and maybe fixed the gate.
Well, no, exactly. So, like, it's... maybe it's supposed to be the same guy, like, you know, like on other shows where they swap out actors or actresses and pretend they're the same person.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
It could be a situation like that, but that, I don't know. It's a loss because that guy hanging around being creepy could have added a tapestry to the show.
He doesn't even have to say anything. It could just be like, look for him in every episode. A creepy Where's Waldo? But
yeah.
we don't want to run the... We do want to celebrate and uplift what the show did as opposed to what it did not do.
Oh, that's
I'm sure
fair.
They're
that's fair.
If this episode is any indication, they're going to give us so much great stuff. We will miss this guy as we will miss Mark Mothersbaugh, but there will be a lot to... I'm still not over Benish, but everything else I'm moving forward with optimism. But yeah, he fixed the gate. That's the reason why. And he apparently didn't even do it on purpose to drive Jerry away. It's just one of those things.
Cool. Any last notes or thoughts about Into the Mystic?
I think it was my favorite episode so far. I think it was the best. My fave. So much fun. Yeah, just I've heard that the second season of the show is very, very fun. So I'm very excited to have fun with this and hopefully improve my guessing game abilities.
Well, thank you, dear listeners, for listening to the show. If your computer is on the internet, we are on Instagram, Facebook,
even your phone,
Twitter. Yeah, even that's so true. That's so true. And feel free to leave us reviews. We read all of the reviews. Some of the reviews we make entire minisodes about.
Sometimes.
This pod is a labor of love. It's like, I don't know if I love making the podcast or love the TV show Sliders anymore. Or like, I don't know which one I love more. But yeah, we hope that that comes through in each episode and that you enjoy it. And Kristen, any final thoughts before we slide out?
No, excited to I won't even make a joke. I'm very excited for the next episode. Can't wait to watch it.
The next episode, by the way, is titled Love Gods. So that is something to look forward to.
I'm ready for fun.
All right. So that's it for this ep, and we'll look forward to seeing you folks next time.
Catch you on the flip slide.